You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hello and welcome. It's Friday and you're tuned in to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, along with me, Tim Dennis. Hi, Tim.
Happy St. Patrick's Day.
Hi, happy St. Patrick's Day to you too. You going to go out drinking tonight?
I'm just going to sit at home and celebrate the way I normally do with a bowl full of Lucky Charms with Guinness poured in it.
Ew, that does not sound good at all.
No?
No, you always need a light beer, especially when you're mixing it with cereal. If you recall from college days, right. We always wanted Captain Crunch peanut butter
right,
with like a nice light Schmidt or Coors beer to give you that flavor. I don't know if Guinness.
Heineken?
Maybe a Heine. Maybe you can put your Heine in with your Lucky Charms, Tim, but I wouldn't try anything else.
No?
No.
All right.
Thicker beers just with the sweetness just offsets.
The malt and the
hops.
Yeah.
People think I'm kidding, but in college, Tim and I used to eat.
Yeah.
You used to eat Captain Crunch peanut butter.
Cartoon cocktails.
With beer, Schmidt beer usually, because that's what we had left over in the keg.
Yeah, that's all there was.
And that's what we would have breakfast, because we didn't have milk. We were college students.
Well, yeah.
Who had money for milk when you have a keg of beer in the fridge?
That's right, yeah.
So that's, happy St. Patrick's Day to all of you. Thank you for tuning in. All right, here's some exciting news. Back again Monday, Tim.
Mm-hmm.
Slogging through supernatural news and parashare stories.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And here's the deal. From now on, if you're interested and you'd like to be a part of Parashare and you're available Sundays between about 12:30 and 1:30 or maybe even like 1 o'clock and 2 o'clock Central Time, just email me with your phone number and a brief synopsis of what your story covers. And we may call you one Sunday. That, to involve you in this as we pre-record, of course, the show.
Yeah.
But then we can call you and have you share your story with us. So if you're interested for this Sunday to be a part of the show and you have a parashare story you've been waiting to tell us, waiting to share with us, then all you have to do is email me and dave@darknessradio.com and be available this Sunday between about 1 o'clock and 2 o'clock. And we'll give you a call. And you can tell your story. We'll record it and have it as a part of the show on Monday. We're trying to work around because I know people like to hear from the listeners as well.
Yep.
So we're trying to do that and see what we can work out. Tuesday, Tim, I'm pretty excited.
Yeah.
People have been asking.
Yeah.
People have been begging.
Uh-huh.
And we finally have an opportunity. That's right.
This is it.
Tuesday, we're back with the triumphant return of True Crime Tuesday. It's a one-off, but it's a show called Possessed, The Stiletto Murders. So it's got true crime and a supernatural element. So that's how we're sneaking that back into the lineup this Tuesday. But I'll tell you what, folks, hear me now, believe me later. The more of you that listen and download that show immediately, the better there is a chance of us getting more episodes of True Crime Tuesday to return. Don't email them, though. I found out they don't like that.
Yeah, they don't do that.
That got us the gig to 5 days a week. But if you continue to email them begging, it just irritates people. So don't email them anymore for True Crime Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just let this organically build. Make sure you listen next Tuesday when we do a special edition of Darkness Radio, Beyond the Darkness, True Crime Tuesday, a true crime show embedded with a little bit of paranormal activity. So that'll keep you in it. Plus, yes, we will visit dumb crimes and stupid criminals. Florida man, you've been busy in the month, 2-3 months that we haven't spoken to you, but we will bring him back in a triumphant return, Tim. He's been a part of many stories. So we'll do True Crime Tuesday with a case of possession, the Stiletto Murders, and then, of course, we'll regale you with tales from Florida and around the world of dumb crimes and stupid criminals. That's the beginning of next week. Pretty exciting, huh?
Very exciting.
Very cool. Yeah. All right. Well, let's get into tonight's show as we wrap up yet another week, Tim. It's Friday, and it's time for a call from heaven. Deathbed visits, angelic visions, and crossings to the other side. Our guest is Josie Varga. She is the author of several books. She's been called an angel who's taken human form, a former magazine editor and communications consultant. Her life changed course when she received a validated dream message from a man who died in September 11th attacks on the World Trade Center. Forever transformed by this experience, she embarked on a spiritual journey as she vowed to help others understand that life truly never ends and love never dies. Life, she says, is eternal, and so are we. She's here to share her insights and information from her book, A Call from Heaven. Josie, thank you for joining us this evening.
Thank you so much for having me, Dave.
It's a pleasure to have you here with us. All right, talk to us a little bit about your background. Have you always been sensitive?
You know, I get that question a lot. The way it first happened, I didn't like jump into this field head first. Most people who get into paranormal research, and I understand that that's how you began your research, or
right.
You saw the spirit of your grandmothers. Is that correct, when you were a child?
Yes, that's right.
Okay. Well, that's kind of what happened with me.
You saw my grandmother too?
In a dream, but not as an apparition. But
okay.
What I mean to say is, what happened with me is I had a vivid dream of my husband's friend who died in the World Trade Center attacks. But the thing is, I never, ever met him when he was on this earth. So I have this dream about him. I'm walking down this long hallway. I come to this room at the end. I walk in. I see desks and windows everywhere. I look up. I see my husband's friend. Okay. His name is Rich. And he says to me, "Josie, thank you for mentioning me in your book." And when I say he said that, Dave, I mean telepathically. Okay, there were no words. It was just mind-to-mind communication. And what he meant by that is my first book, Footprints in the Sand, was just about to be released. And I had mentioned him in the epilogue of the book. He talked about the importance of life and how East Wasted Minute was a crime and things like that. I thought it was, you know, very popular, very powerful, and I included it in the book. So in this dream, I see him, and like I said, never met him, but yet I knew it was him. And he says, "Thank you for mentioning me in your book." And for whatever reason, Dave, my first words to him were, "You have to prove to me that this is really you." Okay? And when I said that, he picked up a cell phone. It was like one of those flip phones at the time. And he showed me a picture of him, his wife, and his son. And he said, "Josie," he said, "Boston is okay." Okay? He said, "Boston is okay." Now, I had no idea what that meant at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But I understood, though, that this was a message that I needed to get to his wife. So the next thing I know, I kind of see myself on the street. And I look out and I see him in what looked like the bed of a pickup truck. And he's standing behind his wife and son. And he looks at me and he says, "Okay, you know, give them the message," and sort of kind of pushes me forward, all right? And when he did that, I woke up sitting up, okay, in a sitting position, panting and out of breath, feeling like something hit me in my chest. I was so scared. Nothing like that had ever happened before. And the first thing I did was I ran to the phone to call my husband, who was already at work. And I said to him, "Oh, my God, you're not going to believe what just happened. You know, Rich came to me in a dream. You have to tell his wife that Boston is okay." And how do you think he reacted? He acted like, "I was off my rocker. You're crazy. I'm not doing this. You just lost
right.
your husband." You know, that kind of thing. So we compromised. And what we did is I sent him an email describing what happened. He forwarded that email to Rich's sister-in-law, okay, because they worked in the same field, so he had her email address. And about 2 weeks later, we get an email from the sister-in-law, and she, to make a very long story short, when he said to me, Boston is okay, the reason he said that is because his wife was considering selling her home and moving to Boston. She had a brother who lived in Boston. So she considered selling her home and taking her son to Boston. But she felt guilty because she purchased a house right before her husband died. So that's what she meant, and what he meant when he said, Boston is okay. So can you imagine my shock? Because I never met this man. But yet, I have to tell you, I knew what I experienced was real. So even though when my husband told me when he sent that email, he was like, oh my God, I should never did that. I wish I could retract it. But I didn't feel that way at all because I knew I did what I was supposed to do. So that whole experience changed my life because I realized that somebody who was deceased gave me a message for his wife that was later validated. And the way it all started with all of my books, I started researching the phenomena, but not to write a book, Dave. When I first started researching it, it was for me. You know, I wanted to know that I wasn't going crazy. And once I started researching everything, I realized, oh my God, I'm not alone. And so many other people around the world had the same experience. So much, in fact, that I've started to write a book about it. And that's how Visits from Heaven came into being, and which led to the rest of my books.
That's great. I mean, what an amazing opportunity. But I mean, how powerful is it when you get a message, especially regarding such a tragedy like 9/11? Does that really kind of make you just stand back in awe of this unseen world around us?
You know, I tell you what, it was really like at first when it happened to me, I said to myself, why me? You know what I mean? Because I kind of felt like guilty in a sense, if that makes any sense at all, because why did he come to me? Why didn't he go to his wife? Okay, why didn't he go directly to his wife and say Boston is okay? Why didn't he just say his wife's name is Karen? Okay, so why didn't he go directly to Karen and say, hey, Karen, it's okay. You can take the baby. You can move to Boston. And I'll tell you why. That particular sign is called a third-party sign. And third-party signs are more validating because I'm an outside party. I had no knowledge of this whatsoever. In fact, I never even met him or his family. So his wife getting that message from me is far more validating. If she were to have a dream of her husband, okay, she might have second-guessed it. She might have said, okay, right. I'm feeling guilty about selling the house and moving, so that's why I had this dream. Do you know what I mean?
Right. No, I totally get that.
Yeah, so that's how it all started, and Visits from Heaven led to Visits to Heaven, which is about near-death experiences, and then from there, I wrote a book called Divine Visits, which is about angelic and divine encounters, and now my latest book, A Call from Heaven, which is about deathbed phenomena.
All right, talk to us a little bit about that for new people coming to the show that might not be familiar with that. What is and what constitutes a deathbed visit?
A deathbed visit is an experience that someone may have on their deathbed. What does that mean? It could be, being visited by an angelic being. It could be Jesus. It could be Mary. It could be angels. It could be a deceased relative, a deceased friend. In fact, most of the people that experience these phenomena are met by family members. It's not, mostly angelic beings. Most people report being met by, like a mother or a sister or a deceased relative, which kind of makes sense because, your mother is the first person that sees you when you're born, and it makes sense that a mother figure will be there when you die. David Kessler wrote a book, and he said that. He said in his research, he found that most people reported being met by a motherly figure. I'll tell you, though, the most amazing thing for me with this book, experiences that are known as peak Endowian experiences. And what that means is a woman by the name of, I think it's Frances Kolb, she wrote a book in 1882. And she wrote back then about these deathbed phenomena. And the reason she called it Picandarian, it was by a poem by John Keats, and he talks about the Spaniards in Panama, and they go over this cliff, Dave, and they expect to see land, but instead of seeing land, they see water. So they're shocked, right? And that's why she called the book Picandarian Experiences. But what's incredible about these experiences is people on their deathbed are met by people that are actually dead, that they didn't, but they had no knowledge of their death. There's a story, his name is Eddie Cromer, and this was reported by Bruce Grayson in a study that he did. So Eddie Cromer has a very high fever, right? And he goes into a coma. He comes out of the coma and he says to his father, "Oh, Dad, I was met by, you know, his deceased aunt, his deceased uncle." And then all of a sudden he says to his father, "And Teresa was there too, but Teresa told me that it wasn't my time. Teresa told me that I had to go back." So his father gets really upset because Teresa was the name of his sister and Teresa was away at college. So the father says, "What do you mean?" The kid's name was Eddie. So he says, "What do you mean, Eddie? Your sister is away at college. I just spoke to her 2 days ago." And he becomes very upset. And the son insists, "No, Dad, I saw her. She told me that it wasn't my time and I had to go back." Well, the father goes home and he gets a message from the college. His daughter died in a car accident just after midnight, but he wasn't told yet, so he didn't know. How do you explain something like that?
Yeah, you know, I don't. That's the tough stuff. I mean, it's an amazing account and it's a great story. And how do you discount that there's something? Yet there are people like myself who, you know, I've been doing this for 12 years and I've had experiences with ghosts throughout my life, Josie, but I still have this overwhelming fear that at the end of it all, it's just a candle in the wind. And once it goes out, it's done.
Really? You still feel that way?
I'm afraid. And I know people write to me every time I mention that. And they're like, "Well, you have to have faith in God and Christ and blah, blah, blah." I have faith, but it doesn't take away fear. Listen, I know that snakes bite. I know if you avoid snakes, they won't bite you. But it doesn't mean I stopped fearing snakes. It just means that I'm, you know, cautious of them, but I'm still terrified beyond comprehension of them. The idea of death freaks me out. Some of these stories bring some peace and comfort to me. But, mm-hmm. you know, on the skeptical side, which a lot of people forget, I'm also a skeptical believer. I understand that the brain sometimes handles things differently and handles, you know, is it the idea that a loved one comes to mind as we're dying, a dead loved one, and we're so afraid of going that visage of the dead loved one starts to tell us don't go when it's really our own personality, our own image that's telling us this. It's just taking on a different look.
Well, let me ask you something. Sure. You said that you saw the spirit of your grandmother or mm-hmm. whatever. What exactly happened?
I don't know.
That experience didn't change how you feel about death?
I was like 2.5 years old, 3 years old at the time. So I have no physical memory of this. I just remember the stories my mom and aunt would share with me. So if it had ended there, okay. I would leave it be. I've had visitation. I've had a dream visitation from my grandfather. But again, knowing my overwhelming fear of death and everything and the way the brain works to cope with grief, even though I had the experience and it was profound and it was deeply touching, I'm still left with the concern of, is this just my brain's way of processing what occurred? So that I can move on with my own life because I'm not letting go. And there was a shared experience, which I've mentioned and I'll briefly mention to you, is, you know, after I had this dream visitation and it was over and my grandfather and I had this beautiful conversation and he let me in on some of the secrets of death and heaven, as he faded away, I sat up in my bed and I could see his face fade into the darkness. My girlfriend woke up and rolled over and said, "Go shut the closet door. I can smell your grandfather's clothes." Because the door, okay. You know, I'd saved a bunch of his outfits after he passed away. And not that my grandfather stunk, but, you know, grandpas have a have a smell to them and cologne and all of that. And he had some of his clothes in my closet that still smelled very much like my grandfather. And I looked at the closet door thinking maybe that was it. Maybe I had a dream and I could smell. It was a hot, sticky night. Maybe the smell had gotten to me and it just entered into my dream. But I looked and the closet door was shut. And it was gone. The smell was gone, but she could smell it. And my grandfather had visited. Again, I'd like to believe that these are true signs from the other side. And that's what fascinates me about these stories. And I'd love to hear more because it does bring me some level of contentment. Now, Tim, let me ask you, as somebody who's had visitations prior to and leading up right after death from loved ones, does that bring you peace that there is something beyond our lifetime? Or are you still left with as many questions as you had before?
I feel a little more secure.
You do? I do.
I do feel more secure. I think more so than I did maybe even, I'd say 15, 20 years ago. In that first visitation I had was in my mid 20s. The first visitation really took me aback. The second visitation, not so much. But in that, before that, I really was having kind of the same experience as you were, where I would stay awake at night worried that there was nothing there. I mean, terrifying anxiety that there was nothing there. Like almost want to grab your heart, feeling like your heart was tightening up type of anxiety. And with the visitations, it did make me feel a little bit better. There did feel like there was something tangible, something very real to it. And that did bring me some comfort, yeah.
Josie, why do you think, you know, I mean, we have these experiences, and I had, as I said, I had my grandmother visited me, my grandfather visited me. I've grown up in what I believe to be a very haunted house. You know, I lost my mother this past November, and I was never closer to anybody than I was to my mother. But my mother hasn't visited me. I haven't seen her, heard from her, not in dream form, not in waking form. And she had always said, don't worry, honey, I'll let you know. And, you know, I'll assure you that there's something later. And she hasn't. And that's a scary as shit moment, because if anybody was going to do it, it would have been my mom to come through. Now, I didn't have any pre-planned programs with my grandfather and grandmother. You know, that wasn't put into play. I've had mediums reach out to me that say, hey, I have a message from your mother. And I have a hard time because these mediums were also friends of my mother. So it's really hard for me to validate if they're truly getting a message or they see my posts showing my grieving process and they're trying to comfort me. So, you know, when we look at the idea of deathbed visits and angelic visions and crossing over, it leaves me just in as dark a place because I can't say that the person I was closest to has come to me to give me any peace on the subject.
But you know how I hear that all the time, like the hardest part of what I do is when somebody, let's say a mother who has lost a child, and they come to me and say, you know, why, and how come, her, you know, why hasn't my child visited me? And a lot of times, Dave, it's because grief gets in the way. They say that, you know, it's hard for those on the other side to come through to us when we are grieving, and sometimes we don't see the signs. And you also have to remember, you said your mother just died in November?
Right.
That's not a long time. On the other side, there is no time as we know it here, okay? So maybe your mother just, you know, has tried to come through to you and you haven't seen the signs, and, you know, maybe it's just not the right time yet. You know, they say that they come through to us when we need it most, but they also say that sometimes, you know, grief gets in the way. And you know, and I know that's hard for you. You know, I know if I lost my mother is still here, but if I lost my mother and I really, really wanted to hear from her and I didn't hear from her, that would be devastating to me. And one of the things that people ask me all the time, you know, Josie, knowing what you know, is it easier for you when you lose a loved one? Okay. And my answer, Dave, is always the same. Yes, it's easier, but it's not easy. It's still hard. It sucks. Okay.
Right. That's kind of how I feel about it, is I've investigated enough claims. I've been in haunted places where I know something is going on, and it's not visual, and it seems to be something from our past, but I'm not brought any comfort by any of this. It just it leaves me unnerved. Now, did you ever have a near-death experience yourself?
No, I've never had a near-death experience. The way it started for me was the visit from my husband's friend. And people say to me, well, you know, did you believe in the afterlife before that? And yes, I did. But the way I describe it is, yeah, I believed in the afterlife, but now I know. I mean, to me, I mean, I know it's different for you, but for me, after having that experience, it was like a known beyond known. Because first of all, I'd never met him while he was on this earth. I only saw a picture of him. Yet when I saw him in my experience, I knew it was him. I had no knowledge of Boston, Dave, whatsoever. And his wife could certainly vouch for me there. I had no knowledge of Boston whatsoever. So how can I possibly make something like that up?
Right.
You know, where did that information come from? And in fact, I recently, after all this time, I never met his wife in person. And when it first happened, I was actually afraid to approach his wife because, you know, you don't know how they're going to react. You
right.
don't know if they believe in this or what. You know, even though I strongly believed in it, I didn't know how his wife would react. So I met her recently. She invited me to a play that her son was in. And she told me, she said, you know, I totally believe. So then I saw her sister, who the one that John, my husband John, sent the email to. And she said, I found it so odd and I was so shocked by your email, I didn't know how to explain it. And I said to her, how do you think, you know, how do you think I feel? So it wasn't easy for me to go public with all of this. When it first happened, I was scared and I thought, okay, you know, people are going to think I'm crazy. And then I realized, but wait a minute, you know, I've really been given a gift because truthfully, I'm not afraid to die anymore. I'm really not. I say I'm afraid of how I'm going to die, you know, like I don't want to be hit by a bus or something
right,
like that.
Right.
You know, so I'm afraid of how I'm going to die. But am I afraid of dying? No, because in my mind, that's not really going to happen. I mean, yes, we die. You know, the body dies, you know, I mean, your mother might not be around physically, but she's definitely around spiritually. You know, and
sure.
Have you ever tried asking her for a specific sign? You know,
yeah, see, this is where I start. And I know there's going to be listeners I piss off with this. And Tim and I talk about these debates as well. But it's something, you know, sometimes you learn too much and you become dangerous, too. You know, I know what mnemonic triggers are. I understand that when you're, you know, our brain is trying to make sense of anarchy and of the world around us. And, you know, I don't believe that a song popping up on the radio is a message for my mom. It's a song on a radio. I'm listening to the, now, if I'm sitting in the car and the radio's off and it turns on and suddenly I hear Cat's Cradle and then it turns off afterwards. Okay, to me, that's a sign. But if I'm sitting in the car and a song pops on that I know my mom'd like, that doesn't mean to me that mom made the DJ play that song. You know, that doesn't occur to me. I, you know, my grandfather smoked a special brand of cigarettes. And if I am thinking about him that day and I look over and I see that package of cigarettes, a lot of people think, oh, it's a sign. I never see lucky strikes, but there they are. And it's a sign from heaven or God or my grandfather. And I don't think that. I just think I'm more hyper aware right now than ever of my grandfather. And I'm thinking of him and I'm remembering things. And I see a package of lucky strikes and it reignites an image of my grandfather. I don't believe it's a sign from the other side. People find pennies all the time and it's a sign and a dime. It's a sign. And I think, holy shit, are you easy to manipulate? This is, that's not a sign. It's a flipping penny. They're all over, you know.
Yeah,
now,
not you see, but some pennies are signs. Not all pennies, though. You know, like people get so caught up sometimes, you know, to believe they're upset. They
right.
want to get a sign so bad that they think everything is a sign. And, you know, that's that, like you said, that's dangerous. I'll give you an let's see
well,
what
it's
you
not,
think
I
about
wouldn't
this.
Say dangerous. Okay. I don't want to be going on and saying it's dangerous. If that's what people need and that will comfort them, then God love them. And I hope that they find
right.
the comfort in that. To me, I, you know, and then it's hard because I've sat there second guessing what kind of message, what sign do I want for my mom that would prove to me that it wasn't just an after effect of my own ego or id putting it out to the universe and now just noticing it because I was asking for it. What would be enough for me to say, that's my mom. That is my mom. It's not going to be a butterfly that lands on my shoulder because I've been hundreds of places where butterflies just land on me.
Right.
You know, I've had white doves show up and sit on me. It doesn't mean that Prince is visiting me. You know, it's mm-hmm. it's just that I'm in the right place at the right time. But that's when you ask for a sign. I don't know how to specifically do it and not feel like I'm tainting the experience myself. I just figured it'll happen if it's supposed to happen and mom will make herself known. And that's why I'm trying not to even rely. As much as I would love to speak to a medium and get the message from my mom, I just right now, the only mediums I know and the ones that I love and trust, knew and love and trusted my mom. And it's an impossible task to go outside of that realm and ask somebody else to do a reading because – you know, my mom, if anybody I think would come to, she'd come to one of these special friends of ours. And on the other hand, she'd know that I would have a hard time discerning that as a real message because of who they are. So that's where I stick. But I don't think it's dangerous to ask for it. And if it comforts people, I'm all for it. But go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt your story, but I just wanted to point that out.
Let me give you an example. So it was my birthday on this particular day. And I had asked my godmother, who passed away in 2010, in February 2010, for a sign. So on that day, I went shopping with my mother, and my mother and my godmother were very good friends. And on the way into the store, my mother noticed a penny. I bent down to pick it up, and it was a 1965 penny, which was the year that I was born. So I said, Now, I specifically asked my godmother for a sign with coins. So, okay. All right, on the way back out of the store, we're again walking across to the car. We see another one. What year is it? 2010, the year that my godmother passed away. Now, to me, that was just amazing. And then how do you, you know, you could chalk it up and say, oh, it's a coincidence. You know, but the fact that I specifically asked her for a sign and I got two coins, the year of my birth and the year of her death, I thought that was pretty amazing.
No, that is. See, I guess what I would want, my grandfather and I used to collect wheat pennies. You know, I guess what I'd want is my grandfather to fling a wheat penny and hit me between the eyes. That would impress me. You know, that's what I'm asking for. And it's hard to do. I'll tell you what, let's cover more of these stories that you put in the book. I want to hear a variety of documented deathbed visits from around the world that you put in this book and hear some of the other insights you have to share. But right now, ladies and gentlemen, close your eyes. Go to the light. Follow the sound of my voice as we enter the dark hives for another true tale in Theater of the Mind, To Hell and Back by Dan Schwartz. After a life of parochial schooling, I had a falling out with religion, church, and my faith. It no longer suited me, and I found it silly. And nothing more than old superstitions cobbled together as a money-making scheme for churches. I never considered myself a bad person, certainly no worse than anyone else I knew. Like many, I was often selfish and not nearly as neighborly or caring as I could be. I had moved into my neighborhood when I was 27 and never once had a word with any of my neighbors besides a simple nod of the head in passing. Then, everything I knew changed on a summer day, a few months after I turned 45. I was out mowing my lawn when I felt my stomach start to sour, a strange sensation in my chest, and I immediately regretted that gas station burritos I had scarfed down for lunch. The heat was getting to me, and I cut off the lawnmower to take a sip of water. Then it hit me like a thunderous punch from Mike Tyson, square in the chest. My mouth dropped open into a silent scream, and my vision began to flicker. I could hear the sounds of the neighborhood, kids playing, dogs barking, people mowing their own lawns. Then it was silent. All I could hear was the offbeat rhythm of my own heartbeat, pulsing in my ears, throbbing, throbbing, throbbing. Then the lights went out, and I collapsed. I remember feeling like I was laying on my parents' waterbed when I was a child. Then slowly, light started to flicker once more, and I could hear voices. Oh, he's here. Finally, he's here. Then I could see bright light, and set against it was the stark silhouettes of people. Voices sounded familiar but distant, calling my name. I began to feel lighter, floating, and my vision slowly began to return to me. And I could see a mass of people smiling, waving. Some appeared to be crying. And when I realized that, I began to feel a sense of dread and fear come over me. Their smiling faces gave way to somber looks. I felt like I was in a large freight elevator looking out at the crowd, and then the bottom dropped out. and I heard what I thought was my mother sobbing as I fell. Through the darkness, terror growing inside me. I was so confused, so scared. I fell for what felt like 10 minutes. Just imagine, the scariest drop from the roller coaster you've ever been on, only it kept going and going and going. Then my body stopped with a jerking motion. I had the sensation of chains wrapped around my wrists and ankles, suspending me above something. I could feel heat, but not like any heat I had ever felt before. I felt it coming at me like waves of heat you see coming off the road ahead on a hot day. The chains, heavy and dense, jangled loudly whenever I tried to move. The blackness around me seemed alive, moving like something from a horror movie. I could hear slithering, but could see nothing. The chains biting into my hands and ankles with every move. Then, the cacophony of screams below me erupted. Slow at first, then it seemed to be coming at me from every angle. Men, women, children, and something animal and very angry. This wailing filled my head and I begged for it to stop. I hung there for days and days. The screams would ebb and then return with a vengeance. My head pounded, every muscle in my naked body screaming out for relief. The darkness all around gave me the most horrific sense of isolation. Even surrounded by voices and screams, I felt so alone, so cold inside while sweating and burning on the outside. Then, the slithering sounds began again, and I could sense something striking at me, like long claws. They would often miss, and I could feel the rush of air from unseen claws, then spasms of pain as they would find their target. Then joyous, dark laughter would bellow from below me. I was going insane. I would cry out but make no sound. I struggled against the chains that would not give. This went on without mercy for weeks. My mind was dissolving into madness. I had a life review, if you can call it that. As I lay there, suspended and aching, I kept trying to rationalize what was happening to me. But the more I did, the more fruitless it seemed. Was this hell? Was I dead? Was this really hell? An actual hell? I tried to remember any stupid prayer from childhood, but couldn't. Instead, I would just remember every hateful thing, every nasty word I spoke, and every person I ever lashed out at. I would feel their sadness, all of it, from all of them, all at once. It was devastating. Then I felt the blows to my chest, and what I could only describe as lightning strikes appearing before my eyes. With every brilliant stroke of light, I could see the faces that surrounded me, locked in horror, mouths agape, screaming, eyes gone or dark and sinister, staring at me with such hate and contempt. The wailing of the voices was everywhere again. Flash! 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 The lights would streak around the room, lighting up more horrors with every flash! 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 I felt the claws swiping at me, the growls from below sounding more angered than ever before. I would feel my flesh tear and my mind screamed in agony as the lights would flash, and the pounding from inside my chest grew more intense. I hung my head and stopped resisting the bonds of the chains, and in my head I cried out, "I'm sorry, so sorry. Please, God, let this end." Then there was silence. There was nothing. Then, as fast as I had fallen, I began to feel myself flying at an inconceivable speed upwards. The cries below began, but sounded hollow and millions of miles away. I realized the chains were gone from my ankles and wrists, and the lightning started again, but I couldn't see anything. Just sharp white light that hurt my eyes, and the electric crackle sound it left ringing in my ears. Then, there was a face before me, the last flash of white light, and I could see someone or something standing before me. That's when I heard a gentle voice say,
"It's not too late."
And all went black. I could feel my body. I could hear background noises filtering in. I could hear voices calling my name, begging me to come back. Then I heard the words, "Clear!" And my body jumped as something hit my chest and filled me with electricity. My eyes sprang open and the pain came crashing through. I was laying in my yard, surrounded by neighbors and police and EMTs feverishly working on me. I looked up and I saw the face of the portly little EMT working so hard to bring me back. He leaned down and said, "I thought I lost you. Glad you didn't give up. You were gone for about 3 to 5 minutes there before we started working on you." What? 3 to 5 minutes? How is that possible? I languished for what I knew was weeks on end, being tormented, screamed at, and torn to pieces slowly. Eternity means something more to me now, I'll tell you that. I lived the pain of everyone I ever hurt. It felt like forever. Now, sometimes at night when I lay there unable to sleep, I can hear the screams of torment. I can feel the claws trying to grab me, but I always come back to the soft voice that said,
"It's not too late."
God, I hope not. And we're back. This is Beyond the Darkness. And Tim.
Yes.
I need you to come with me. Come to the light.
All right.
It's time to cross over, Tim.
No, I'm not ready.
No time. It's Tim to cross over.
No,
it's Tim to cross over.
Tim doesn't need to cross over.
No, Tim, you need to cross over to come to True Car. Because you're no longer in charge of your own destiny when it comes to buying cars, Tim. You've got to yield to my will.
Oh.
Because you need to use True Car.
Well, I can do that.
Yeah, see, it's simple. I was just trying to bring you over to this side, the other side with me, Tim.
Oh.
So that when you research for your new or used vehicle that you're going to buy very soon here because of the bell tolling for your current vehicle.
Oh, yes.
It's time to find a good way to get that done. And True Car, that's the way to do it. Why? Not just because they're our advertiser, but that does help, Tim.
Oh,
because
yeah.
I inspect all of our advertisers to make sure that they're giving us the goods,
mm-hmm.
that they actually work like they're going to work.
Mm-hmm.
They follow through on their promises, and True Car does that, Tim. They have 3 million cars sold, 13,000 dealers, Tim.
Wow.
Over 700,000 pre-owned vehicles available right now, and I can save you $1,000. Make it $2,000. All right, Tim, forget it. Let's go. How about an average of $3,000 off manufacturer suggested retail price? Are you ready to cross over now, Tim?
Yeah.
Well, then all you need to do is use True Car next time you're going to go purchase a vehicle, buddy. We've been talking about this for weeks, and I know that you're just you've been off your hoof. I've been driving you around a lot.
Yep.
You've got your personal chauffeur Butterworth driving you around a lot.
Yes,
but
Butterworth.
Eventually, the payday runs out, and you've got to get a vehicle again.
That's true.
And there are 700,000 pre-owned vehicles available through True Car certified dealers nationwide.
Mm-hmm.
And what does that mean? Well, when you use True Car, Tim, you'll see that there are other people in our area and what they've paid for the car you're looking for. So again, that takes away some of the guesswork. You don't have to be afraid, Tim, to cross over. You don't have to be afraid to use True Car, because with this, it makes it completely easy for you. You're getting the messages from the other side. You're getting messages from 13,000 dealers, Tim, who've been certified to deliver the goods to you. So this way, when you check online and you see the price, when you get there, you know that you're getting the vehicle that they showed at the price that was promised and at the price other people are paying for it.
I like that.
Right. And once you register, you'll actually get to see their real inventory.
Mm-hmm.
So it's competitive pricing offered to you by True Car certified dealers, so that when you get there, there's none of that shell game nonsense.
Oh, I hate
Bam, you got the car you came looking for. And they might have some other ones that fit exactly what you're seeking as well. With over 3 million cars sold through True Car by True Car certified dealer networks, you got the confidence knowing that this isn't a startup, Tim. This isn't brand new and you got to wait and let it grow. 3 million cars is an awful lot of cars.
Oh, yes.
And this gives you the chance to go check that out. So promise me, buddy, look me in the eyes.
Okay.
Look into my eyes. Deeper, Tim. Deeper. Look into my eyes and promise me that the next time you're ready to buy a new or used car, you use True Car.
I will use True
Car. Look it up. True Car, all one word. You'll find all the information and you'll get the confidence backed in buying a car when you're ready with True Car. Now, I also want to make a quick mention here, Tim. Now that you've crossed over with me,
yes,
and you're going to be back on the road soon,
yeah,
we're going to have to start getting out and hitting some locations. I know there's a lot of cool events popping up around the United States this year and around the world. Remember, I'm going to England not once but twice. You got to be careful what you wish for, son. Remember, I've always wanted to go to England.
Yeah, me too.
I'm going in September, and I'm going in August. And maybe if you're a good boy, Tim, and you get healthy and get back on your feet, I'll let you come with me next year when I go back to England.
I'd like
or
that.
Scotland or Romania or
that.
Australia,
yeah.
Wherever we end up, Tim.
Yeah.
Just me and you, buddy. You are my shadow, and you can join me once you're up and healthy.
Yeah.
But for those of you that would like to see us domestically or around the world, you can always check darknessevents.com. We only have a few spots that remain for the England trip, our second England trip, which will actually be before our first England trip. Do you need an abacus to figure this out, Tim?
I do, yes.
Our first one in September sold out in 18 hours. We had to add a second trip. We had to go back in time to August. So August 2017, we will be doing our first wave British invasion, where we'll get to go with Neil's story and investigate all these great places and see the history and hauntings of England.
Hmm.
Then we're going back in September, but that sold out. It's no good to anybody. So just sign up for the August one, which is already half sold out. Did you follow all that?
I believe so, yes. Yeah.
We'll be at the Chicago Paracon this year.
Right.
We're going to be at the Michigan Paracon this year. We're going to be all over. So just the best way to find it is go to darknessevents.com. And you can join me this July when I return to the Oddfellows Asylum, the Belvoir Winery in Missouri, with Chris Fleming and Bill Chappell to investigate for two nights. There's day packages, night packages, and full event packages available for you for everybody's price tag. Come on out. Have a great time with us. Check out tickets at darknessevents.com. All right. We're back. Our guest is Josie Varga. We're talking about A Call from Heaven, her new book, Deathbed Visits, Angelic Visions, and Crossings to the Other Side. Now, we just heard, Josie, kind of a, in my opinion, terrifying tale of one of our listeners who had a deathbed vision, visited hell, and came back. Do you get many stories where it's negative when they have these near-death experiences?
I haven't heard many. I've heard some, but about 19% of the stories that come in, they say, are negative. The majority are positive. You know, obviously, if they feel that they visited hell and came back, like that's like a near-death experience. Howard Storm is one of them. He had a negative experience, and I think he came back, and he's some kind of priest or something. So he was totally transformed by his experience. So, yeah, it does happen, but the majority of the experiences are positive. When it comes to deathbed phenomena,
mm-hmm.
A lot of times it happens because they might – whoever comes for them, if they don't recognize that person, well, then a lot of times they're afraid. There's one story that I heard about a little girl that was the woman, it was an older woman, and she was in hospice care, and she kept saying that there was a little girl there waiting for her, but she didn't recognize that little girl and was afraid because she didn't recognize the little girl. She ended up passing away. And what they found out the next day was that other family members, before they died, claimed to see the same thing, a little girl. So obviously this girl was connected to the family in some way, but the woman did not recognize her and was fearful. So most of the time when it comes to deathbed phenomena, that's what happens. If people don't recognize who came for them, then there's an element of fear. But like I said, most of the time, there is no fear. But I wanted to bring up a couple of stories.
Yes, please.
That I think are pretty amazing.
Okay.
There's one story that I love. People always ask me, well, every time I write a book like this, Dave, it's like, okay, well, you know, which story do you love the most? And I hate that question because there are so many incredible stories, I can't just pinpoint one. But I'll tell you why I love a few of these stories. Mm-hmm. There's a woman named Barbara Harris Whitfield. She's written several books. One of her books is The Natural Soul. She had two NDEs, and I've known her for a long time now. And she told me a story about a patient of hers named John Loringer. And this man, he was in his 30s, and he ended up being paralyzed, and he was completely bedridden, okay? And he fought the state of Connecticut. He wanted to be taken off life support because he was completely dependent on people for his every need.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing he had was his voice, and he was beginning to lose that too. So he didn't want to live anymore. So they agreed to allow him to be taken off life support. And she said she was in the room with a bunch of other people. And one of the last things he said is, through his voice box, he said, "They are coming for me at 5 o'clock. Okay? They pull the plug, they take them off life support at about 10 a.m. They expected this guy, John, to die within 2 hours, but he hung on. And you know what? He died at exactly 5 o'clock. And, you know, so I love that story because they expected him to die soon after they took him off life support. He did not. He hung on, and he died at exactly the time he said he was going to die. Now, where did he get that information from? You know, that's right. One story.
Now, when you hear these stories, though, and they're talking, do they say who does give them this information? Is it angelic? Is it family members?
Sometimes they don't. Sometimes they don't. In this particular case, he spoke through his voice box. So he didn't speak often, obviously. So he didn't say who gave him that information. But sometimes people do. People say, oh, my mother was here, or, you know, there's an angel in the room, or whatever the case may be. There was another story, which I love, comes from a woman. She had a father who died of cancer. And the father called out to his mother. Now, she said, okay, you know, obviously my father would call out to his mother. So she didn't think anything of it. She was skeptical, didn't think anything of it. And all of a sudden, he says, Shankar, you have come too. And, oh, you look so young. Shankar was her uncle. Shankar was her father's brother-in-law, a man he did not like. Okay? Mm. A man he did not like. So she told me, she says, Josie, when he said that, I realized, oh, my God, you know, him calling out to his mother is something that's not unusual. You know, he's sick, he's dying. Of course, he probably wants his mother with him. So she thought, okay, maybe he's hallucinating. But the fact that he called out to a man he never liked when he was alive, to her, was proof that it was a deathbed visit. And she went to the doctor at that point and said, you know, what's going on here? Why, you know, is he saying these things? And she said, oh, yeah, you know, he's probably just hallucinating and things like that. And she said, no, it didn't make any sense to me at all, because the clarity, like he was so, you know, the clarity in his voice. She said, you could tell that my father really was seeing his mother. You could tell that my father really was seeing his brother-in-law. That's another favorite of mine. And a third one that I wanted to mention was a woman that I know in town where I live. Her husband was homesick. They thought he had a cold, you know, and she called him up and she said, hey, John, you know, how you feeling? You want me to pick you up anything on the way home? And he said to her, Judy, I'm sitting here at the dining room table. I'm writing bills and I keep seeing dead people running around the dining room table. She's like, what? She goes, oh, John, stop taking that cough medicine. She's like, you know, I thought to myself, Josie, my husband must be, you know, hallucinating. So she goes, I didn't think anything of it. So she goes home that day. They have dinner. Everything is normal. They go to bed. That night, she said that whenever her husband couldn't sleep, Dave, he would get up and he would drive to Dunkin' Donuts to get coffee. It was a habit of his. If he couldn't sleep, he would go get Dunkin' Donuts coffee and he would, you know, drink his coffee and go back to bed. Well, on this particular night, she wakes up to the sound of a loud thud. She runs downstairs. She finds her husband on the floor in the dining room. He was sitting on a chair in the dining room. There was 2 unopened cups of Dunkin' Donuts coffee on the table. He, you know, had a massive heart attack and died. And that really was amazing too, because, you know, he said to her, there are people around the dining room table and I think they're dead people. And she's like, oh, come on. You know, you're acting
just
silly.
Dismissing it, right.
You know, and then he ends up passing away later at the dining room table where he saw those dead entities. So that's another amazing story.
Had she given any idea what her husband had seen? I mean, were they trying to get his attention? Was it just like he was?
She said, I asked her that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of times, Dave, when, you know, people come to you with that, your reaction is, oh, stop it. You know, and you don't ask them for more details.
Mm-hmm.
And she said she didn't ask her husband for more details. And she regrets that. You know, I've done it myself. I mean, people have come up to me with some experiences in the family, and I didn't ask for more information. And looking back, I wish I would have. But he didn't say who they were specifically. He just said, I think they're all dead people. So to me, what that tells me is maybe he didn't instantly recognize all of them, because why would he say, I think they're all dead people? I mean, obviously you would know,
right?
If your mother is deceased, you know, okay, that's my mother. She's deceased. So I'm guessing there were probably a lot of people there that he did not recognize.
Hmm.
I
know you cover in the book as well. You talk about these deathbed phenomena, angelic visions, shared death experiences, and I want to get into some of those. But talk to me about gateway or portal appearances. This is something relatively new to me. I've not heard of at these moments.
Gateway is basically people witness what they describe as a portal or an opening. It's almost like, they're laying in bed and they see what they describe as a tunnel. So, you know, that's one of the things that people have noticed. Actually looks like a portal. You know, when people have near-death experiences and they describe seeing a tunnel?
Right.
Well, it's kind of like that. You know, they're lying in bed and they actually can see this tunnel. They can actually see what looks like an opening, you know, an opening to the other side.
That's and when they see these portals, are they seeing through? Are they seeing friends and relatives on the other side beckoning them in, or are they just seeing like this vortex open up for them to go through?
Both. There are some people that do see just a vortex, and there are other people that see faces within, you know, within that vortex, within that gateway, however you want to describe it. I mean, you know what's amazing about all of this? I mean, I've heard hundreds and hundreds of all kinds of experiences, and yet they are so similar, but yet they are different in a lot of ways as well. Another type of experience is atmospheric changes, and that's something that happened in my own family. My Uncle Tony passed away. He had a brain tumor, okay? And, you know, when he got to the end, Dave, he could no longer talk or speak. But he would, like, lift his finger and point to things. So on this particular day, my sister was there, my mother was there, his wife, my cousin, and they're all sitting in his room. And my uncle kept looking at a spot in the room and pointing. And so my cousin said to him, Dad, do you see someone? If you see something, you know, if you see someone, point. Tell us where that person is. And he pointed, indicating that there was somebody else in the room. And as soon as he said that, there was like bifold. My aunt has like bifold doors in her bedroom closet, and there's no window open or anything. But the bifold doors, Dave, opened all by themselves. And it wasn't like, somebody was standing near the doors and somehow that's how it opened. No, they just opened all by itself. Everybody in the room saw this and were completely shocked. And he died soon after that. So when he was still able to speak, he would always tell me that his mother came for him, that he would always see his mother. So, you know, we're hoping that it was my grandmother that was there for him.
You know, talking about the portals, the one aspect, you know, I kept asking, and Mom and I were involved in the paranormal and like this, and as she was on her deathbed leading into the last few weeks and months, I would just ask her, Mom, have you seen anybody yet? And she kept telling mm-hmm. me, no, nobody yet. And I knew she knows that freaks me out, and that, you know, I'm sure she was freaked out. I almost got to the point where I wanted not to ask anymore because I didn't want to make her more afraid of what was coming. And even a couple days beforehand, I asked her, have you seen anyone yet, Mom? Have they come for you? And she said, no. But at one point when she was sitting there, she looked up and she goes, oh, And I said, what? She goes, oh, it's just all so clear now. And I said, what? And she said, the sky. And I looked up and she's looking at the ceiling. So kind of talking about the portal. And I said, oh, so you see the sky? And then it's like she snapped out of it and looked at me like, oh, you heard that. And she's like, yeah, yeah, never mind. And then she passed away a day and a half later. But it was, she saw like the ceiling vanished or whatever. She could just see beautiful blue sky. So there was that moment as well.
Well, there's another story like that. There was a case where this woman was with her father, and they were all in his room. Now, her sister had passed away before the father. So at one moment, you know, they were all in the room, and he said that he could see a sky, and he kept saying how beautiful the sky was, but nobody else in the room could see it. Well, he died soon after, telling everybody that he could see this. And as he was taking his last breath, she heard her sister's voice, her deceased sister. And her deceased sister said to her, don't worry, it's beautiful here. And she said it was the most amazing thing. And I know exactly what she means by that. You know, what I said before, when I had my experience with my husband's friend who died on 9/11, mm-hmm. when they speak to you, they don't speak to you with words. They speak to you in your mind. And another thing I want to mention, I'm hearing impaired, okay? I'm hearing impaired. But yet, when I have these experiences, there's no doubt of what I'm hearing because it's in my mind. It's mind-to-mind communication. So I find that pretty amazing. And
Do they have accents in telepathy? Do you hear accents or dialects when you are communicating that way then?
No, I just hear it comes through kind of like a thought. You know, I'll give you an example. There was one case where I was in my room and I was doing laundry, folding laundry. And all of a sudden, I heard in my head, call my mom. And intuitively, I knew it was this girl, Angel. Angel was a girl that I mentioned in my book, Visits from Heaven. Okay? She passed away. And when I was writing the story, her mother said to me, my God, that story is so perfectly written. It's almost as if Angel was whispering in your ear. And I told the mother that when I was writing that particular story, I almost like felt the spirit of her daughter standing next to me. So anyway, on this particular day, when I heard call my mom, I don't know how, Dave, but I knew it was her. I knew it was this girl, Angel. So what do I do? I go downstairs. I get my file of contacts for that particular book. I find the contact information for her mother, and again, I was very nervous. I'm like, okay, you know, how's she going to react? But I called her mother up. I told her what happened, and you know what she said to me? She said, oh, my God. I said, what? She said, today is my birthday. So then it made perfect sense to me. I said, okay, well, I guess happy birthday from your daughter. But that's an example. It was I don't even know how to even describe it. It's just like a very strong thought. It was like very clear, you know, call my mom. There's another story, and that's also in my book, A Call from Heaven. I have a friend, Nancy Clark. And one year, I was having some health issues, and I had a procedure done. So I was laid up, Dave, and I figured, okay, since I'm laid up, let me read her new book. And I get to, her book was called Divine Moments, and I get to the end of the book, and in the book she talks about her deceased husband and how, you know, they would celebrate their anniversary every year, and he would buy her yellow roses, okay? She talked about how love never dies and all that. I closed the book. And all of a sudden, I hear really clear in my mind, buy Nancy yellow roses. And I thought to myself, buy Nancy yellow roses? Like, what the heck? Okay? So, but it was very, very clear. So I said to my husband, John, I just heard buy Nancy yellow roses. I think it was her husband, Chad, telling me to buy Nancy roses. And he said to me, well, if you really think that that's what you heard, go ahead. Buy her yellow roses. I said, all right. So I didn't have her snail mail address. I only had her P.O. box address. So I emailed her and I said, Nancy, I'll explain later but can you please send me, you know, your mailing address? I need to send you something. She replied back to me, but she didn't give me her address. But you know what she said?
What?
She said, Josie, Saturday would have been my husband and I 50th wedding anniversary. Well, I was just, my mouth just dropped. Because I said to myself, oh, my God, that's why he wants me to send his wife yellow roses, right? So I write her back again, and I said, listen, like I said, can you please give me your, you know, snail mail address? I'll explain later. So this time she writes back, and she says, oh, okay, and she gives me her mail and address. And I go on, and I'm looking for the perfect yellow roses for her. And I like lilies, right, Dave? So I find these flowers, and it had a few lilies in it. And I go to order it, and it wasn't going through. I mean, the computer kept shutting down. It just wasn't going through. And I said to myself, okay, I guess these are not the roses that I'm supposed to send her. I go on again, and I find lawn stem yellow roses. I said, okay, these look really pretty. Just yellow roses. And I ordered that, no problem. Okay. So the day comes. I put on the card, Nancy, these roses are not from me. They're from Chad with all his love. I said, call me, I'll explain. Meanwhile, on her end, Dave, she's praying and praying and praying and asking her husband to please bring her a sign for their anniversary. So it's close to 5 o'clock. The flowers haven't been delivered yet. She's thinking, okay, I guess he's not going to bring me my sign. She opens the door, and there were the yellow roses. Now, to me, that was pretty amazing. And what would have happened if I didn't follow through on, you know, on that thought that came to my mind? But that's what I mean. It's like a thought. I really wouldn't say, you know, I mean, some people do hear it.
Right.
It's like if I came to you and I sat next to you and I was talking to you, some people do hear it that way. But when I have it, it's usually in my mind. It comes to me like a thought. That's the best way I can describe it. And that story is in A Call from Heaven. I think that's one of the most amazing things, because very often those on the other side elicit the help of others to bring a message through. And that was a very, very powerful message for his wife, obviously.
Obviously. Wow, that is that is definitely impactful. Now, deathbed visits, when you talk about shared death experiences, and I know we've only got a few minutes left together, can kind of bring our listeners up to date on what a shared deathbed visitation means.
A shared death visit is when someone else participates in the experience. There's a woman by the name of Annie Capp in the UK. Her mother was in the US and she was in the UK. And at the moment that her mother was on her deathbed dying, her daughter experienced many of the symptoms that her mother was going through thousands of miles away. And she couldn't understand what was happening. I mean, she was, you know, gagging. It felt like something was stuck in her throat. And she said she was with a client at the time, and she had to excuse herself and end the session. And she said she had this overwhelming feeling that she needed to call her sister, who was with her mom at the hospital back in the United States, okay? When she finally got to the phone, and her sister, she could hear her mother in the background, and she realized at that point, Dave, that she was actually experiencing a lot of the same things that her mother was experiencing. So a shared death experience is getting to do just that, to share somebody's deathbed experience. And it doesn't have to be negative.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in Annie Capp's case, she had some of the physical, she took on some of the physical symptoms that her mother was experiencing. But, you know, there are other people who maybe have a dream at the same time, you know, who witnessed the phenomena. There's a woman named Jenny Taylor Martin who had a dream. You know, she saw her mother in her dream, and she was saying goodbye to her mother in her dream, saying, I love you, Mom, and saying goodbye to her mother in her dream. And she said at that moment, she was awoken by the phone, It was the hospital calling, telling her that her mother had just passed away. So, you know, shared death experiences, people who actually get to share in the experience in some way. In Annie Kapp's case, she got the physical symptoms, but it doesn't necessarily mean that. It could mean that they come to you in a dream, you know, at the moment that they die. You know, one guy had an out-of-body experience where he actually saw the body of someone else being lifted from his, you know, bed. So it doesn't have to be a negative experience. There's all different kinds of shared death experiences.
A Call from Heaven, Deathbed Visits, Angelic Visions, and Crossings to the Other Side. It's the new book by Josie Varga, and if you'd like to get a copy of that book, make sure that you go visit podcast1.com, click on the Killer Deals link, and then you'll find the Beyond the Darkness banner. Click on that, and it'll take you into the special program we have with Amazon.com. So wherever you're listening from, the UK, Canada, or the United States, click on the corresponding banner, and whatever books, videos, clothes, furniture, anything you order, by using those links, a small percentage goes a long way to help your pals here pay all of the administrative costs to keep the show on the air. And it costs you no extra, and the people selling their items don't lose a penny. It all goes right from the top and goes to help us out. So make sure that when you purchase this book, and you should purchase this book, a little portion will go a long way to help keep this show afloat. Josie, thank you so much for coming on to share your stories with us this evening.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
It has been a real pleasure chatting with you and spending some time. So thank you for being a part of it. We'll be back with you guys again next week. Again, on Monday, we've got Parashare and Supernatural News. And Tuesday, the return of True Crime Tuesday, Possession, the Stiletto Murders. We'll talk about that. That's right. A paranormal true crime on True Crime Tuesday for you. So I want to thank everybody, especially our advertisers for their week. We've got Harry's.com, Harry's Razors. We've got True Car, Amazon.com. And remember, if you need your fix over the weekend, you want to continue to listen to great and strange, fascinating stories and subjects, check out our buddies at Coast to Coast AM. That's Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. Tonight, George's guest is a professionally trained psychic and medium, Christian von Lahr, who will discuss his ongoing work exploring direct communication with the nature people, as well as other realms of consciousness, including ghosts and angels, and how we can tap into other dimensions and energies to enhance our decision making and intelligence, followed by 2 hours of open lines in the latter half of tonight's show. And I'll be back hosting it on March 25th. And again, back April 8th. You can keep up with when I'm going to be hosting and what the topics are every night by visiting coasttocoastam.com. And if you check it out, become a Coast Insider. Sign up for a 1-year subscription, less than 15 cents a day, and it gets you access to 5 years of past shows. I've been hosting it for 4 years now. So that means you can hear every show I've been a guest of and been a part of hosting on Coast to Coast AM. Plus, you get thousands of other hours of the best in overnight talk radio. So thank you, and check that out for yourself, coasttocoastam.com. Until next week, be kind, be loving, and be sweet to one another. Life is too short to be a dick. Remember that. That's a message and a public service announcement from your pals, Dave and Tim, here at the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's,